The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined as always by Mr. Denny Carter. It is week two. We finally have stats. We finally have data. We finally have usage patterns, but we also have injuries. So Denny and I are going to dive into all of it, talking about some of week one's most fascinating situations and the going forward implications, including what to expect from this week's big waiver wire additions. But first, Denny, in addition to stats, in addition to data, we have new coaches. And it was a better week for some of the new coaches than others. We might touch on the latter, a.k.a. the worst weeks, in a moment. But you actually wanted to start with a rare – you wanted to start with positivity?
This positive development actually confirmed my priors, which is very rare. It is our new analytics king, Brian Daboll, going for two and the win at the end of the game against the Titans. There are some thoughts I want to get out there. One, way to go, Brian, if you're listening, and I know you are. That it was the right call no matter what happened, okay?
But what happened was, of course, the Titans immediately got into position to kick a game-winning field goal and just happened to miss it.
But it was the correct call no matter what happened.
Good job. It was
there. And the national media is giving Brian Daboll credit because it worked, which that stinks. That stinks. He should be given credit for making the call. The results have nothing to do with it. So we talk on the show all the time about it would be nice if the analytics worked once in a while. They worked one time. So we have that going for us, which is nice. And also this has flipped my allegiance. So I have been an avowed and committed Giants hater for the past few seasons, mostly because Joe Judge was the head coach of the team and they were doing things like
Joe Judge threatened to come to your house, beat up your family. I may be making that up, but
well, his fans did. And the funniest thing that happened after the Giants won is that I received messages from Giants fans with whom I have quarreled very much, saying, how do you like me now? And my answer was, I like you fine now. this is good. I like Brian Daboll. Do you not get why I was not liking the Giants? Is that you think it was the blue uniforms? You think that was the thing? Or do you think it was Joe Judge who had a prehistoric approach to the game of football that I dislike? It might have been that.
Yeah, Joe Judge threw it back to 1894, Princeton, Harvard, pretty much. But even Pip Lolly Stockings, the coach of the 1894 Princeton, like, yeah, maybe don't quarterback sneak from your own 2-yard line.
Yeah, well, what are you doing there, son?
That's actually why he invented the forward pass. He was someone who went back in time and was so disgusted by Joe Judge. Like, I have to invent the forward pass.
Right. He got here into 2021. He saw the quarterback sneak in the shadow of his own goalposts, and he said, oh, dear God, I got to go back, and I got to change the future.
It sounds like you are flying a mission accomplished banner for analytics. Is that true?
I mean, this is significant. I think that a stodgy, stuck-in-its-ways organization like the Giants would hire someone like this who's willing to go for two for the win in the fourth quarter. That's progress. That's progress. The Giants, the Raiders, Washington, the Cowboys, the Bears, these old franchises are stuck. They're stuck, and they have been for many years. And now maybe the Giants are unstuck.
Where first John Harbaugh failed five to six games in a row last year with the attempted walk-off two-point conversion. Brian Daboll finally converted. And speaking of walk-offs, Nathaniel Hackett had a little different plan in mind on Monday night where they got their new $250 million quarterback, and they have three timeouts in 54 seconds. But instead of trying to get 5 yards, Denny, they attempted a 64-yard field goal, much to the horror of this nation. Is there any hope for Nathaniel Hackett? I feel like that's an instant, like, well, this guy's going to be gone in less than 2 years type of decision. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's over pretty much. I mean, you know, they'll ride out this year, probably next year as well. But come on. I mean, literally no one can have that approach. Desperately trying not to lose. That was the overriding goal there. I don't want to lose. I don't want to win, but I don't want to lose. That was, you know, that precipitated what happened. That's a huge red flag. And again, once again, I'm asking NFL organizations, please, please have your coaches play video games so that they know what to do in those situations. We need simulations for every coach.
Seriously, you've got to play that too. You know, to run up the score, you know, to pad the stats if you ever play the video games. And with Nathaniel Hackett, so I was pretty sure it was over. Denny choking, laughing. Yeah. I was pretty sure it was over when he made the field goal decision. I'll tell you when I really knew it was over for Nathaniel Hackett is I was watching his post-game press conference, and he addressed someone in the media as sir. I'm like, you can't, Nathaniel, if you have respect for the media, you're not going to last long in this NFL coach fraternity. You were supposed to loathe the media. You were supposed to treat us with nothing but contempt.
Yeah.
And like having respect for the media, I was like, wow, this guy's in out of his.
He's probably too nice. I think that's the issue. I mean, I get it. If you're like one of these prodigies, like a Sean McVay, who is 15 to 20 years.
I mean, if you're a literal kid, like Sean McVay, then you may have a little respect for the media.
Then saying sir to a guy who has covered your team since before you were born, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
But Nathaniel Hackett is no spring chicken. And I am concerned about that too.
Yeah, we're ostensibly in the media, but I mean, treat us with contempt.
Yeah, no, you got to kick us in the teeth and things. Yeah, please.
That's just not. That was a really, really bad sign. But you know, well, these coaches, we'll see what happens. Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett, 2 years tops. I think that's pretty much settled.
They made a huge mistake.
Brian Daboll, Lombardi's, and his future. Denny, the first place fantasy managers will be looking for waiver wire salvation is the 49ers backfield and Jeff Wilson following Elijah Mitchell's knee injuries out 2 months. Jeff Wilson looks good on paper, the lead back in a run-first offense, but as hardened fantasy veterans know, the road to Kyle Shanahan hell is paved with the best of waiver wire intentions, Denny. Is Wilson actually going to help people, or will this be a commodified mess? You know, will Tyrion Davis Price just suddenly be the lead back after being inactive last week? Will Jordan Mason live up to the hype, or should we actually believe in Jeff Wilson?
I couched my Jeff Wilson take in the waiver wire column, which you can find on NBCSportsEdge.com. I couched it with saying that, you know, A, you have Debo in the backfield. B, you have Trey Lance in the backfield. And then C, and not insignificantly, you have Tyrion Davis Price, who will probably be active this week. If he's not active, that's a huge development.
If he's not active, then talk about someone who will be joining Nathaniel Hackett, like in the bread line.
Right.
If TDP is not active this week.
So TDP, as the kids are calling him, he will be active. And the reason he wasn't active, and our own Ray Summerlin actually made this point on Twitter today. I think it's a good, dot connecting process here. Mason, the third string running back for the Niners.
For the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, what is his name? Jordan Mason?
Yeah, it's Jordan Mason. I believe he didn't play a single snap.
He didn't play that, but he played special teams, which is why maybe he was up and TDP was down, right? And so with the injury to Mitchell, TDP comes in, and then Mason continues to play special teams. Anyway, I do think TDP needs to be rostered in a lot of leagues, maybe not every league, but a lot of leagues. I do think Jeff Wilson gets the first crack at it, but we know Kyle Shanahan. We know he won't be hesitant to flip the switch if Jeff Wilson is not effective. And honestly, Jeff Wilson has not been effective in a long time.
He's pretty much never been effective. He's had a few really big games. He had a 180-yard game at one point, but I mean, Jeff Wilson's not a lead back. Like, he's a classic like cog in a committee. And you mentioned, you know, the Debo threat, the Trey Lance threat. They both outrushed Jeff Wilson on Sunday. Elijah Mitchell outrushed Jeff Wilson despite being in the game for like 5 minutes. And it's one of those classic situations where like you can't not add Jeff Wilson. And you know, some teams probably already really in trouble at running back, but I wouldn't be like emptying the fab clip on Jeff Wilson. I will very much say, I think Jeff Wilson honestly is going to like max out as a flex.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that honestly, I know you're probably going to cut my mic here, but
that's fine. I'll cut it. It's fine.
I wouldn't argue with someone who would rather add Rex Burkhead.
Oof. Jeff Wilson. I mean, I never cut your mic when you tell the truth. Unfortunately, there is a lot of truth in that really, really dismal, dark sentence that was just uttered by you. But yeah, I mean, would it really be surprising if Jeff Wilson wasn't even the lead back in week two? I mean, that would be a bit, even for Shanny, a bit over the top, but I feel like you can't like count that out. Can you?
Well, okay. So per our own Patrick Corain's pass rate over expected stats, San Francisco was -19%, -19% under their expected pass rate. That is the lowest in the league. I know the rain.
Yeah,
the
I will say, I honestly, I really just don't. I know everyone kind of knows. I don't think you can take any of the passing stats from either the Bears or the 49ers at face value on Sunday. It was some of the worst weather I've ever seen in an NFL game.
Yeah, it was. I do think that this is probably a bottom three team as far as pass rate goes. So, you know, that could fuel some volume for Jeff Wilson. I don't know. I think that the rushing quarterback thing could be quite the hit to anyone who's back there for the Niners.
I haven't done like a huge like think on the rankings yet, but I think I'm going to have Jeff Wilson like the RB30 range. And if you're hoping for a plug and play RB2 like Elijah Mitchell was, I just don't think that's happening here. And so Adam, make a reasonable bid, but like live to fight another day, basically, if you really need a running back and you've got fab to burn, because you do, because it's week two. So hopefully you still have fab to burn. But live to fight another day is what I would say with Jeff Wilson. Beyond San Francisco, Denny, we have the Los Angeles Chargers in a receiver core road tripping to Kansas City on a short week without Keenan Allen, at least we think without Keenan Allen. That is not official yet for a 54.5 totaled affair. Fantasy managers who took late round flyers on Josh Palmer were probably disappointed by his week two output. DeAndre Carter was kind of disappointingly involved, but Pro Football Focus's Nathan Yonke charted Josh Palmer as playing every snap in two receiver sets. So the usage was still pretty good. Is he a preferred ad who will immediately start paying dividends for fantasy managers who didn't draft Josh Palmer this summer?
Yeah, I don't know if we can put too much stock in what happened in week one. That was a weird situation where no single Chargers pass catcher saw more than four targets, which is just incredibly weird. Keenan Allen was
kind of a back and forth game too. How is that possible?
I don't know, but Keenan Allen was on his way to a big game. His absence creates a huge hole in the target share for LA. Josh Palmer, you know, with Keenan Allen out last year for one game, led in every metric that you could possibly look at. He was actually the wide receiver one for the Chargers that week. So yes, it was disappointing last week, but this is your chance. Like you may not get a whole lot of chances to confidently use Josh Palmer in 12 team leagues. This is your chance.
Yeah. I think you just totally shake it off. You don't worry about DeAndre Carter, who apparently is the next man up in the receiver core. Looks like he's the fourth receiver over Jalen Guyton. But again, he was charted as playing every snap in two receiver sets after Keenan Allen left the game. So that's really the only bullet point that matters for me with Josh Palmer in week two. Disappointing as the targets were. I mean, Do you have any thoughts on Mike Williams, by the way? We weren't going to talk about this, but is there any four targets? Like you said, by definition, no one had more than four targets. Have you come across any Mike Williams factoids, or is it just Mike Williams being Mike Williams?
Yeah, I have not. And I have looked, actually, but he led the team in pass routes against the Raiders, and he led the receivers in snaps by a pretty good margin. Again, you know, four targets. It's just, man, it's pretty baffling. You would think that
Brandon Staley's analytics say you get tired after more than four targets. Right. Kind of like in baseball, you don't want the pitcher facing the lineup a third time. So they've set a hard cap for everyone's targets per game at four.
I didn't know that about baseball. That's interesting. Yeah.
It's actually pretty disappointing with the Chargers, though, Denny.
It is. Yeah. It is.
More than four targets now for Keenan Allen. I feel like we have to adjust.
Well, and I would say don't freak out.
I also say this moving back to serious mode now with you. You're saying don't freak out about Mike Williams.
Yes, I'm sorry. I lost your the joke took on so many levels that I wasn't sure where we were.
So went down a few different rabbit holes. So
my brain just started to tune it all out. Yeah, don't freak out. I mean, if you drafted Mike Williams and you hated yourself in week one, you know, first of all, welcome to the club. And secondly, you're playing him in a game that should go back and forth. Mike Williams has had big games against Kansas City's secondary. So just plug him in, and I believe things will get better.
It's pretty bad that a riff actually broke your brain. I wasn't sure that was possible.
It did. You riffed so hard that my brain said, nope, I cannot process. So I was trying to hold on to two thoughts at the same time, your riff and then Mike Williams. And I just decided, nope, I'm going with Mike Williams.
You didn't know the third time through the order thing, by the way. It's one of the many things ruining baseball right now. Like, we have no ace pitchers anymore because, yeah, your numbers decline precipitously when you face a lineup for the third time.
Real quick, on baseball, they're banning the shift. Is that correct?
They are.
Okay,
they are.
And that's bad.
No, I've come around on it, to be honest. Okay. Most of the real baseball heads are, like, aghast. Like, all, like, the Sabre people I really like and respect on Twitter, most are aghast. Some are coming around, like our very own Chris Crawford, who's one of the smartest baseball people I know. And the counter argument has been, well, if you want to beat the shift, just become an all-fields hitter, you know, like Rod Carew did. But now they throw 97-mile-per-hour sliders.
And I see.
It's a little hard to go oppo.
Yeah.
And pitchers have the nastiest stuff in human existence.
All right. So this is evening it up a little bit.
It's evening it up a little bit. And it's very drastic. It is very, very, very drastic. But I had come to believe it was time for drastic action. And I've also, any normal fan I've talked to whatsoever, aka someone who's not a daily Twitter user, has just been like dying for the shift to go away.
Okay. Okay.
And it could have unintended consequences, but I'm a fan. And Chris Crawford, check him out. He's an amazing writer. He agrees with me. So
there you go.
Denny, it's week two and Dak Prescott is already injured again. Like an emotional Pete Carroll challenge, Jerry Jones has declined to place Prescott on injured reserve despite a 4 to 6 week timetable following thumb surgery. So at least in theory, he could be back soon. But what does the landscape look like now for what could be one of, honestly, the league's worst offenses? Well, it was one of the league's worst offenses, even with Dak Prescott on Sunday night against the Bucs.
So before, I just want to share this. Before Prescott's injury, he had the lowest completion rate over expected of anyone who played in week one. Okay. And it by far, like it is, it was bad. So the Cowboys season was over before this. And now it's extra over. And I, when I was talking on the waiver wire stream earlier today on the NFL and NBC YouTube page, folks were asking, do I pick up Josh Palmer and play him over CeeDee Lamb this week?
Ooh, man.
And if I were in that position, I have to say that I would seriously consider it.
I don't know about that.
This Cowboys offense is a disaster with Cooper Rush going forward.
It's a disaster. It was also a really banged up offensive line against a really, really elite defensive front in the Tampa Bay Bucs. Like, I feel like things can't be quite as bad up front for the Cowboys as they were against the Bucs. The Bengals, I mean, are kind of an opportunistic defense, But I mean, what is Cooper Rush going to do? I feel like he's going to lock on to CeeDee Lamb. But also, though, it would be nice, just like if the analytics were ever right, it would be nice if CeeDee Lamb were ever good.
Look, I'm just saying it wasn't going well before the Dak injury, was it? It's not like, oh, CeeDee Lamb's blowing up. No, CeeDee Lamb was invisible before the Dak injury. And guess what? He was invisible after. And it was Noah Brown who was getting all the looks. I'm just saying.
It would be nice. It would be CeeDee, though. Man, what a tough situation. I'm keeping CeeDee in the top 24. I have plunged CeeDee Lamb to like low end wide receiver two in my initial
weekly
ranking. Is there anyone? I mean, there's no one that benefits from this, obviously.
No.
Is Zeke Elliott still a top 24 running back?
Probably just through sheer volume alone.
What is sheer volume in Zeke land these days, though? It's like 16 carries. He never gets fewer than 16 carries, but I feel like he never gets more than 16 carries.
Either. Yeah, it's always exactly 16.
That 17th carry through the lineup.
I'm looking at his game log over the last 3 years. It's 16 all the way down.
The mainstream media should be talking about this.
No, and no one does. It's really bad. It's really bad for everybody. It's bad for Dalton Schultz. Bad for Lamb.
I think it's neutral for Dalton Schultz, because I feel like he'll just remain like the easy targets receptacle, like Cooper Rush. Like, well,
hopefully,
I'm bad. We're bad. Guess what, folks? Dalton Schultz getting another target. That's all I can do, and still be a top six tight end, I think, Dalton Schultz. But yep, not looking good for the Dallas Cowboys. What is looking good is the rest of the show when we are right back after this.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Join the new Roto World League in the NBC Sports Predictor app and play Sunday Night 7 every Sunday with all of us here at Roto World for a shot at $100,000. That's right. We created a league to let you see how you stack up against our fantasy football experts all season long. It's easy to join and play. Simply download the app, create or sign into your account, click leagues, and use code ROTO22. That is ROTO22 to play. And just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, Major League Baseball, on the NASCAR circuit, and in the Premier League. There's also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Vikings and Eagles in our Sunday Night 7 contest. Denny, the Premier League mentioned in that promo, Premier League didn't play last week out of deference to the passing of Queen Elizabeth II.
The NFL could have taken some notes.
They could have. Yes. No. The NFL has never – well, they did. They actually did cancel for 9/11. They delayed an entire week.
I don't think they –
No, they did. They delayed an entire week.
Oh, it was. I'm sorry. And then I remember because the following week was an emotional victory for the Dolphins over the Raiders at home.
I think they controversially played after JFK was killed, but I could be totally making it up. Someone should get on the world's number one definitive history source, Wikipedia, and look up.
By the way, Pat, we have some breaking kicker news that I need to share with the folks. Rodrigo Blankenship has been cut
by Are you serious?
The Colts. Yes.
Oh man. And,
so what happened was he kicked two balls out of bounds on kickoffs against Houston, and he missed a critical field goal. He went full Vanderjag basically against the Texans, and he is now jobless. That's tough. I feel for the kid. He was very good as a rookie. He had a hip injury last year. He seemed to be back, and they have cut him. I think Josh Lambeau will kick for Indianapolis. He is worthy of your consideration.
You want to talk about a real one, Rodrigo Blankenship. He'll be back. I hope so. He'll be better than ever. Real quick, putting a bow on the Cowboys conversation we had earlier. We had a viewer ask, would we drop Michael Gallup, who seemed very close to playing in week one, now could be looking at 3 or 4 weeks without Dak Prescott. Would you keep the faith with Michael Gallup, or would you drop Michael Gallup?
I would try to keep the faith.
I would keep the faith, just to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if Dak comes back in 4 to 6 weeks or whatever, maybe more, and Michael Gallup takes on that wide receiver two role, he could have a lot of volume just like off the bat. So, you know, 12-team league with a standard size bench, I think that you can keep him.
Yeah, that offense definitely needed a second safe haven for wide receiver targets, and Michael Gallup will be seeing a lot. He's in a 10-team league, by the way. Would you drop him in a 10-teamer?
I would.
Probably, yeah. So, sorry, Michael Gallup. Yeah. We hope you get better soon, but we can't roster you. We just can't do it in this 10-team league. One of the most fascinating develops of week one was Antonio Gibson not only operating as the Commander's lead back, but actually out-targeting J.D. McKissick 8-3. There's some wrinkles in that data that we'll get to in a second. But Denny, is this the moment fantasy Antonio Gibson dead enders have been waiting for? Has he finally arrived?
You speak so highly.
Sorry, was that a leading intro?
Dead enders. Well, if you look at the stats, Gibson ran 26 routes to 17 routes for McKissick. Obviously, had that 8-3 target advantage. Had 14 carries to 3 for McKissick. So I think the usage was good, but the thing is, McKissick was doing the whole third down role thing, and Gibson's role didn't really change. The production changed, which was nice, but the role didn't change dramatically.
Yeah, and Pro Football Focus charted McKissick is still playing every third and long and playing every snap in the hurry up and the 2-minute drill. So I don't think the role change was as big as meets the eye, but the usage change is interesting. It's Carson Wentz, a guy who's not known for targeting receivers. We actually will get to that in a second, but who likes to throw to anyone other than wide receivers. So you have to take note of 8 targets from Carson Wentz in his first game with the quarterback. And I would also say with Antonio Gibson, maybe it's a situation where, at least until Brian Robinson gets back, where it's like kind of like Joe Mixon, where he's not playing every third down, but he's playing like enough third downs. Like maybe he's not playing like in the really high leverage third down situations, but he plays like enough third downs. He starts, you know, he's not proven as a pass catcher just to get enough targets, where it's frustrating that he's not like the third down back, but maybe the role expands like just enough to make it. And Gibson was someone you have to really react strongly to week one developments. Like you can't wait around and like a lot of times week two rankings can kind of be like whiplash from what you've been looking at all summer.
Yeah.
Cause you have to acknowledge reality. And I think one of those realities that some people were already doing this. I was being really cautious with Antonio Gibson. I kept him more as a flex than an RB2, but you definitely have to treat him as an RB2 for week two.
Yeah. And you know, he's probably going to get goal line carries. He's a short yardage back. And by the way, the Commanders have a pretty nice matchup against what looks like not a great Lions defense.
Yeah, the Commanders, a lot going on with the Commanders in week one. Curtis Samuel comes back for 11 targets. He turned him into only 55 yards, 8 catches, but he did score a touchdown, kind of like four carries for a guy who kind of dabbled in being Debo before Debo was Debo. Really interesting week for Curtis Samuel. And then Jahan Dotson scores 2 touchdowns in his NFL debut, only on 3 catches. So a lot of really, really weird stat lines for the Commanders. And just what are your takeaways for people who are either thinking about adding Jahan Dotson, adding Curtis Samuel, have already added Curtis Samuel, Jahan Dotson? Like, what is real there? what can maybe be sustainable going forward?
So the question I've gotten a lot today is, do I add Dotson or Samuel? And the answer, you know, based mostly on week one usage, is Samuel to me. Dotson's final line against Jacksonville looks a lot better than it should have been with those two touchdowns. Was not targeted heavily. I think 5 targets on a bunch of routes. He ran as many routes as Terry McLaurin and only got the 5 targets. Whereas Curtis Samuel ran around 80%, which is strong, but it's not 90%+ like Dotson. And his target per route run was way higher. And get this, Pat, his ADOT, his average depth of target, was under 2. We are talking about a full PPR scam going on with Curtis Samuel, and I love it. I think you add him.
There was a lot of that. I mean, 41 attempts, excuse me, for Carson Wentz. I wonder if that's going to be the plan every week.
Yeah, well, they were way above. Look, there were some shocking things, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but you have at the top of the pass rate over expected for week one, you have the Dolphins, the Chiefs, the Seahawks, and Washington.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
Maybe they'll be way, you know, the Commanders will be actually somewhat pass heavy. I mean, they didn't have to be. They didn't have to be against the
Jets. It's still Scott Turner, right? Is their offensive coordinator?
Yeah.
Like he's always kind of wanted to be pass heavy. So maybe like he trusts his personnel. Well, it's crazy when Carson Wentz is the guy you trust. But
Wentz,
you gotta give him credit.
You do. You
gotta give him a little credit.
You gotta hand it to him.
You always gotta hand it to Carson Wentz, who's better than Taylor Heineke. I will admit it.
Good. Yeah. I mean, really way better. Yes.
Yeah. Taylor Heineke. We love our meme QBs, but they usually fail pretty hard or fall pretty hard. Taylor Heineke was a swift rise and an even swifter fall.
Yeah.
May God rest his soul. He's still with us. Denny, another offense with fascinating week one goings on. How do you say that phrase?
Definitely not that.
Goings on. There we go. A lot of fascinating goings on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where Julio Jones was looking something close to back, and Rashad White operated as the clear number 2 back and the clear number 1 after Leonard Fournette limped off the field late. We'll get to Rashad White in just a minute, but we'll start with Julio. Do you think there's some wide receiver 3 juice here?
I do. Folks were asking me today on the waiver wire stream, why didn't you mention Julio? Well, he's rostered in too many leagues, but not that many, because people are saying, well, Julio's out there. Look, he ran 22 targets. I'm sorry. He ran 22 routes against the Cowboys. That was second on the team behind Mike Evans, who ran 23. Now, there was a lot of garbage time in the fourth quarter, and Julio was on the bench yucking it up with his new teammates.
You'd love to see that, the chemistry.
Yeah, I did. 5 targets on those 22 routes. He caught a long one, ended up with 69 yards. And I think that he's going to be probably the wide receiver 2 behind Evans with Chris Godwin out. And in this pass heavy Bucs offense, I think Julio is really interesting.
I think even when Godwin comes back, Julio could be in the top 36. And we saw a Bucs situation last year where they probably would have 3 top 24 wide receivers if everyone had been healthy at the same time, and Antonio Brown had not been Antonio Brown. So I don't think 3 like top 36 will be all that crazy. And Julio, I think Next Gen Stats recorded him with one of like the fastest top speeds of any player in the NFL in week 1. So physically still seems to be there. It's just a matter of if he can keep his hamstrings healthy. But I think even if Godwin, the Bucs have also said Godwin's injury is not as serious as they feared. So maybe it won't be a long absence for Godwin. I think Julio, even with Godwin, could be top 36. And this week maybe could push for top 24 wide receiver 2 valuation.
I think so. I think so. Tom Brady looked to him, I think, when the game was in doubt. And I think for the first game, your first game with a new team, I think that's great. I think it's a great indicator that he will be involved.
Rashad White, I mean, can we really get excited here? Or Leonard Fournette, you know, I was an evangelist against Leonard Fournette this summer, and part of it was this his propensity to pick up soft tissue injuries the past few years, and he looked really good when healthy. I mean, he looked like a top 10 running back.
Yeah,
when
healthy. Sure.
But then, yeah, he limped off late. Now, there's no real indication that's like super serious or anything like that. But have we seen enough to already declare Rashad White the clear number two back? And is he someone roster spots are at a premium? Is he someone maybe we should be keeping around in 12 team leagues, Rashad White?
I think so. You know, if you rostered him before the season, go ahead and hold on to him. I mean, he was the lead back when Fournette gimped to the sideline. And honestly, I thought there was something to that. I mean, he's okay. I do think it's going to be worth tracking his practice participation, especially later in the week. I mean, Lenny's old-ish, and
he's like 27. He seems very old. He's an old 27.
He is very, very old.
Now, what I was trying to say there is I always think he's old, and when I look up his age, like, wow, still 27, huh?
Yeah, he's 27 going on 47, it seems. But I think Rashad White is clearly going to get something, maybe something even close to a three-down role in a very high-scoring Bucks offense. So hang on to him. Hang tight.
He does seem to have dispatched Keyshawn Vaughn and Giovanni Bernard already.
Yeah, I don't know every time I mention Rashad White in the preseason, Keyshawn Vaughn is the number two. What?
Yeah, no, not happening ever. Not incorrect. Now or ever. Over Bruce Arians' dead body. He's a special advisor to the GM, but that's still the one condition was as long as you don't play Keyshawn.
The only advising he does is to call every coach every week and go, do not play Keyshawn. And
I saw him in Jerry World. He had binoculars staring down the field. I believe he was a healthy scratch, Keyshawn Vaughn. So there was actually no chance of him getting in the game. But he was making sure like none of the coaches were even talking to Keyshawn. so he was not a Keyshawn Vaughn fan. Denny, 59 Joe Flacco attempts powered strong performances from each of Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, and Garrett Wilson in week one. But we would assume that is not going to be the plan going forward with the Jets. I will say I assumed that last year, and they just never stopped passing either. Sorting through this snap and target data, what do you think some of the takeaways for fantasy managers should be going forward? Because the Jets are like a very confusing situation. I was doing my initial week two rankings. Yeah. Like, I don't really know how to separate Garrett Wilson and Corey Davis. I don't know where to rank like any of them. Like for someone who like didn't see the game, hasn't done a deep dive in the data, I don't know what to think about the Jets wide receivers.
Well, I did watch the game.
That's right. And you got to get Sunday ticket.
I'll never get Sunday ticket. I mean, everything is inflated. We have to remember that, you know, the Jets are probably not going to drop back. I think Flacco dropped back 64 times. Not going to have that very often. So you have like Elijah Moore running 55 routes, Corey Davis running 42, Garrett Wilson running 35, and then Berrios running 29. Wilson's involvement was surprisingly solid. You know, 8 targets on those 35 routes. I think he is for right now, like Corey Davis is probably the 2A and then Wilson is the 2B, but that could flip. I think that could flip with a little more experience, with a little more trust in Garrett Wilson. Remember, and this is a top 10 pick in the 2022 draft. I could see Wilson taking on that role. Elijah Moore had a frustrating day. Okay.
He did. Didn't he only have 7 targets?
He did. And you know, a lot of those, it could have been way, way better. Only 7 targets on those 55 routes. He had a touchdown called back. He had another end zone target that if it was a slightly better throw, could have been a touchdown.
If it had been any other human than Joe Flacco.
Yeah, so we're talking about a week one that could have looked really good, and it ends up looking pretty bad. Don't lose the faith. Don't freak out. You're still starting him in 12-team leagues.
This is weird because I feel like all three of these Jets receivers like have some claim to stake. Basically, Elijah Moore just seems to be the best and seems to always be the person still catching the attention of the coaching staff and the Jets media. Garrett Wilson is the first-round pick, like you said. Corey Davis is the extremely highly paid veteran who was getting pretty good usage before he got hurt last year. I just feel like it's going to be a weird, weird situation to sort out. Like combined with the fact that this is not like the long-term quarterback. And I think it would have been more honorable to lose than have 64 Joe Flacco dropbacks. I just like you need to just – that's one situation where you need to do the right thing and you just need to establish the run.
Yeah.
You know, cannot be having 64 Joe Flacco dropbacks in 2022.
Yeah, it is kind of alarming, isn't it? Elijah Moore had some good use. He had a 33% of his routes came from the slot, as did Garrett Wilson, also had 33% from the slot. So they sort of rotated there. They definitely moved Elijah Mitchell around to try to keep him, to try to get him open. It was just a matter of Joe Flacco not really being able to complete the process.
He did complete the process of being Joe Flacco.
God, did he?
So he always does that. He's very, very, very good at doing that. Denny, in one of the greatest scams ever perpetrated on a proud American people, we may be down, but we're not out in this country. Taysom Hill has tight end eligibility on a majority of fantasy football services. Yeah. And he had 4 carries for 81 yards and a touchdown in week 1. Finishing is what these websites claim is the tight end 3 in PPR leagues. Denny, I watched this game. Taysom Hill is a quarterback, but we can't fight City Hall, it appears, on this situation. So do we need to be taking this serious? I know a lot of best ball people were taking this seriously over the summer, sometimes half jokingly, but people were planning for this eventuality. I can't say that word at all. Eventuality. What the heck do we do with this? Like, what do we do? What do we do? Give us guidance, President Carter.
So the people should not despair.
Freedom from want, freedom from fear, that kind of thing, so on and so forth.
Look, if you're already Taysom-pilled, then you're probably excited about starting him going forward. He only played 16 snaps against Atlanta. He ran 4 routes as a tight end.
They do that. It's like just to keep up appearances because they know there's like IRS agents in the stands being like, you know, because this is obviously some elaborate tax scam being run by the Saints.
Juwan Johnson ran a route on, I think, 85% of Jameis Winston's dropbacks. So Juwan Johnson is something. Taysom Hill, I don't think we can like bank on this happening every week. I know you wanted to share some thoughts about Alvin Kamara's usage against the Falcons, but Kamara had a rib injury that he picked up apparently during that week 1 game. Perhaps that influenced the way that Taysom Hill was used as a green zone rusher. He accounted for over half of the rushing production from the Saints against the Falcons. I wish I could be more definitive here, but I'm dubious. I'm dubious about how he's going to be used if this can be consistent.
The Taysom stuff, frankly, seemed to be like a designed series early in the first half where clearly something they had installed during the week. And you don't do the Taysom series on like the first scripted series, but it seemed somewhat scripted. And it came at a point in the game where the Saints offense had started out very lifelessly. And it helped that he gained 57 yards on 1 run, Taysom Hill. So I think they kind of like kept him in there.
Right.
It was like the hot hand maybe. But it seemed like a very like niche part of the game plan and like not something that was going to be like a theme. And it basically just worked really, really, really well for that one series. Taysom, man, I really don't think you can be trusting him as your tight end 1. The weeks like this are going to be very, very few and far between. He's also very injury prone. I mean, as much as that is a thing, we know that might not even be a thing. Taysom he's banged up a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, I would feel more comfortable with a guy like Gerald Everett, who's out there running.
Yes.
Running consistent routes in a.
Say, I'm someone who actually plays tight end is what you'd be comfortable with.
Well, look, if he had played 30 snaps and gotten 8 carries, then I would be saying yes. Taysom, get him in your lineup. Just play him. You know, if he's going to get 8 touches a game, you can't rely. There's no other tight end on the waiver wire who's going to see 8 touches a game. So do that. But it wasn't that many touches. He got the touchdown. So it looks good. He got the long run. You can't bank on that. It's very iffy.
It is very, very iffy. And Kamara, I would just say don't despair about because I actually think it's good that the overall touches were down for Kamara. Where something we've talked about where he's just miscast in like that bell cow, like 25, 30 touch role. Like that's just not him. He's going to wear down under that role. That's never been his role. And he didn't convert that insane volume into production last year. And he just seems much better as like a pick your spots, explosive, like, you know, kind of like Austin Eckler, DeAndre Swift type. And so I don't mind Alvin Kamara being back more in like the 15 to 18 touch range. The four targets is what's going to scare fantasy managers, you know, because it's Jameis Winston too, a guy not exactly known for checking down. But I think the four target, I mean, the Saints were down two scores at halftime. They were down 26 to 10 in the second half. It's Jameis Winston at quarterback. You're just not going to be checking down in that situation. Yeah. And I really think it was this game script and game environment is why the targets were not greater for Alvin Kamara. And I really would not be worried about Alvin Kamara's usage. And I think we're going to get pretty vintage Alvin Kamara usage going forward.
I hope so. Part of me thinks that the Kamara we knew was predicated on Drew Brees.
It's quite possible.
Being a great screen passer, you know, like and being willing to just dump it off time and again and again. That generated so much PPR scam production for Kamara, who added to it by being a great runner after the catch. So I don't know if those days are coming back. I don't think, of course, you drafted him in the second round probably, so you're not looking for peak Kamara. I don't think peak Kamara is walking through that door anytime soon.
That's kind of dark, but I say I didn't draft Alvin Kamara anywhere.
I have him in one league, and it stinks.
I'm very smart, so I just didn't do that. Cam Akers, no, I drafted that guy. I really dialed off Cam Akers after August 1st.
Yeah, there were some issues with Akers' latency. I will say, in leagues where I got Kamara in the second round, I look at those second round receivers and I think, why did I abandon my religious beliefs?
Michael Pittman. Yep. Yeah, I know. You're being excommunicated from whatever church you attend, Denny. We'll be right back after this.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Don't forget to check out Matthew Berry's new show, Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and Roto-World and doing what he does best, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and so much more. There'll also be plenty of actionable information along the way for you sports bettors. Check it out weekdays at noon on Peacock or listen to the show on podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. Denny, you're the waivers man. You're the waiver wires man, and you got to do like the flavors of the week. So that's why you wrote, I believe, 6,600 words on Jeff Wilson this week. Go check it out. Go read every last word on it. But you like to take some like looking forward ads, like people who might not be hot additions this week, people who might not be startable this week. But who are some of this week's looking forward ads from your waiver wire column on NBC Sports Edge powered by Roto-World?
Yeah, so I mentioned Wilson, but in that same 49ers backfield, I think it would be savvy of folks to add Tyrion Davis Price, not Price Davis, like I always want to say.
It seemed like you had never seen that name before. Like you were gonna right. Tyrion Lannister.
I was scrolling as I was talking. Tyrion Davis Price, like I said earlier in the show, it could end up being the early down back for the Niners. So if you don't want to go, you know, if you don't want to spend a lot of free agent budget, if you don't want to use your top waiver claim to get Jeff Wilson, just scoop up TDP and be done with it.
So, would you rather add Tyrion Davis Price or Jordan Mason?
I think Davis Price.
I think you're right too. To be, I do think that's a pretty good point that Ray made, that it probably really was just about special teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really like, I really thought that was a good point. So, and then some other running backs that I mentioned in the piece to add, just looking forward, Eno Benjamin was very much the clear cut number two running back in Arizona behind James Conner. Now, as long as James Conner is okay, healthy, upright, Eno Benjamin will not be a thing for fantasy. But he has great contingency value. Darrell Williams, by the way, is a non-entity in the backfield, did not see the field against the Chiefs.
Yeah, he seemed like someone who might not have a roster spot for much longer.
So add, you know, where you can, some other guys, low roster, Jaylen Warren, for the Steelers. He played every snap after Najee Harris left the game with his foot injury. Apparently Najee is okay. He's one of those running backs who's never really hurt. So you might want to scoop up Warren on your bench. Dontrell Hilliard is the clear insurance behind Derrick Henry. Raheem Mostert is available in half of leagues. And he would be the lead back for Miami if anything happens to Chase Edmonds. So those are just some guys who, again, don't have much appeal right now. You can stash, and something happens to the starter. We're not wishing that, but it does happen. The chaos takes hold, and suddenly you have a guy who sees 15 to 18 touches.
Denny, someone we weren't going to talk about today, but someone has asked, who's watching live, someone I did not know how to rank this week, about James Cook.
Right.
Like, is he even rosterable right now?
No.
I kind of feel like he's not.
I don't think so. No, I mean, he had that fumble, I think, on his first touch.
It was his first career touch, the good old-fashioned Kareem Hunt.
I mean, wow. Wow. And he's not going to get the forgiveness that Andy Reid offered Kareem Hunt. Zach Moss needs to be added in a lot of leagues. Zach Moss appears to be back from his injury ravage 2021. Really? I mean, it was bad for him in 2020. Folks forget he was the lead back over Devin Singletary for a stretch there, especially late in the season. Zach Moss is one Devin Singletary injury away from being the lead back in Buffalo. So pick him up.
Yeah, the Athletics' Joe Biscaglia beat that drum all summer, including on our podcast. And it was correct that Zach Moss is going to be a part of that. He didn't look very good against the Rams, I will say. And Devin Singletary, again, looked like the best Bills back. They just do not want to commit to him. And
yeah, right. So I would say Moss is not usable until something happens there. But the James Cook thing, I'm sorry to the drafters, not happening.
Denny, right. You wanted to mention, I was hoping to kind of run out the clock on this. you wanted to talk about Greg Dortch. What team is he even play for, Denny? Tell the people about Greg Dortch.
Greg Dortch plays for a team known as the Arizona Cardinals. You may have heard of them from such places as being crushed by the Chiefs this past weekend. look, Rondell Moore suffered a serious hamstring injury right before the season. He's out. Like, he's not going to play, I don't think, anytime soon. I guess we will have to make sure of that going forward. But Greg Dortch played almost every slot snap against the Chiefs. Let me finish. Do not cut my mic. He was the top targeted Cardinals pass catcher. He led the team. He was second on the team in pass routes, just behind Marquise Brown. Dortch had a 27.5% target share against Kansas City. So until Rondell Moore returns from injury, I think Dortch is just a plugged-in PPR scamish type player. And you get in deeper leagues, I think you should pick him up and you should consider starting him.
Yeah, you got to go where the snaps are, where the snaps, targets usually follow, especially in this kind of offense. But, man, they just look – so they looked bad enough where I'm, like, almost worried about Kyler Murray.
That's right. Defense was lifeless. I can't decide which was worse, the run defense or the pass defense. I know they were playing Mahomes and everything, but it'll be worth watching this week. So they're going to be chasing points. They have a terrible receiver group. And I'm sorry, Marquise Brown.
It is horrible.
It's Marquise Brown is no one's idea of an alpha number one receiver. He's not. So you're going to, I think that a guy like Greg Dortch is just going to fall into some targets. Like he's not great, but it doesn't matter.
As much as we joke about Cliff Kingsbury, like it is for real. He's just not a good coach. Like we've seen back-to-back games, like big time games where like the wild card game, they had just no plan at all. Like no discernible approach. Like it just blown out of the building. They're playing a major league team, the Kansas City Chiefs in week one. Same thing. Chiefs do whatever they want on offense. Cliff seems to have no coherent plan. It's tough because Rondale Moore and Zach Ertz both got hurt during the week. But like, this is the NFL. Like you plan and adjust around those things every single week.
Yeah.
Cliff just never seems to have answers. They seem to always run reasonably fine if they've got like their normal 11. But you have your normal 11 for like one or two games a year.
Cliff Kingsbury is always saying things where you go, are you not the head coach? It's like, it's like if a president was like, well, we need to do this in the White House. The White House needs to do this. You're the president. You do it.
And our producer Adam points out the Raiders opened as 3.5-point favorites over the Cardinals this week. It's already risen to 5.5. So
yeah,
the people known as sharps think the Cardinals stink.
Yeah, I think it'll be something of a bloodbath. By the way, I just wanted to mention this about the Texans backfield because we just talked about.
Oh no! I'm going to cut his mic this time.
Wait! Lovie Smith said this is his quote from just now as we're podcasting. Quote: sometimes when you look back.
Oh no! Was that wrong when I gave Rex Burkhead 40 touches?
Sometimes when you look back, you can't defend the amount of reps our starting tailback got. In some of those situations, I wish Pierce had gotten more, and we're going to work to get him more of those opportunities. This is after he played, Pierce played 27% of the team's snaps. So I'm wary when coaches say that sort of thing. Look, if you want a guy in, he'll be in.
That is about as forthright of a coach quote as you'll ever hear. Where he's basically like, yeah, I mean, like, my bad on the Rex Burkhead thing. Like, I'm sorry you had to watch that. I know there are children that watch the games, and we're sorry. We goofed.
I mean, Patrick Crane made a great point after the game, which was that, hey, Pierce never was a workhorse in 4 years in college. Okay? Like, maybe there's something to that.
Uh-oh. Final question before we end the show. And yeah. A serious question. I mean, it's the kind of thing we talk about jokingly. Who do you think will be fired first, Matt Rhule or Cliff Kingsbury?
Rhule.
Yeah, I just think that it's not working. And you can't look that bad against the team starting Jacoby Brissett. And another team that just doesn't have a plan.
Like, no plan.
You don't turn on a Carolina Panthers game and like, oh, at least see what they're doing. You know, I'm like, what are you doing?
There's no strategy. The strategy is to hold on to my job. That's the strategy. Just to do just enough. And by the way, the management for the Cardinals apparently loves Cliff Kingsbury, so he's not going anywhere.
They do. Man, they gave him an extension in March, but I honestly think both these coaches might be gone before Halloween. I really do.
Okay. The one situation where Kingsbury's gone is if they start like 0-6, then maybe.
Which is looking in play.
Yeah, sure.
Well, that was a good show. It's a good week too. We finally have games in the book. Again, I just wanted some data. That's all I wanted. I wanted new stats.
Me too. I have been done nothing but look at that data for 48 hours straight.
I'm engorging on it. Yeah. I need to take a nap. I've had enough data to last a lifetime. Now I want less data.
Thankfully the season's over.
Yes. Thank you. Thankfully this show is over. Thank you so much for joining us. Please check out the site. Check out Denny's waiver column. Check out my rankings in a day or two. Check out our week one preview show in 2 days with myself, Denny Carter, Kyle Dvorchik, and a triumphantly returning Patrick Corain from the city of Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll break down all of week two's games. Thank you for listening. For Denny, I'm Pat. We'll catch you later.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.